will think too often, let this man be in us, which is in Christ Jesus, and to be transformed by the renewing of our minds, not conformed to the world or its establishment ideas, but to be conformed only to the Christ thought. How can we get disease out of our thought unless we do? If this cannot be done, the system of Christianity of positivism, although theoretically true, is of no practical value. It is said that as long as one feels a pain, he cannot avoid thinking of it. There is a show of truth in this assertion, but it is equally certain that as long as we think of it, we shall feel it, and by any means we can get our thoughts away from it, so that it is utterly out of thought, we no longer feel it. Here is a contest between feeling and thought. Christianity is a realm of thought and mind, not emotional sensation. Which has the right of dominion? Which one shall govern and control the other? It is a well-established principle in mental science that our thoughts are under the control of our volitions, but the feelings and emotions are not so. There is a self-determining power of thought which we call free will. We can change the direction of our thoughts as readily as a sailor can alter the course of his vessel by varying the position of the helm. But in the mind, the department of the feelings lies beyond the direct action of the will. These cannot be changed or suppressed by any direct volitional effort, but only mediately through the thought. If I am in pain, or unhappy, or diseased, it is possible for me, or you at least, to think of something else, and in proportion as this is done, relief is gained. I have found this so true in my life. 15 years ago, when diagnosed with terminal cancer, wasted away to just a few pounds, I meditated upon the truth of the scripture. Whatsoever thing is lovely and good report to think on that. And I healed myself through this Christ thought, brought myself out of Methodist hospital, and amazed my doctors. We have seen the power of thought in our meetings achieve everything that man thought impossible. Just 1 week ago, before the congregation of 3,000 people, a woman literally died. There was a mixture of thought. People came, the blue of crowds, some came just to see her wounds shaking in the wind, others just out of curiosity, and she was surrounded by people of, you might say, unsympathetic thought to the work of Christ through this prophet. And she died. Of course, she was up in the years of 88 or something like that, but she died before the congregation of 3,000 people. Her eyes were fixed against the ceiling. Medical people rushed to her and found no respirations, no blood pressure. Absolute cessation of life. They gave her nitrogen and all the things to try to inspire her heart to beat again, but nothing achieved any success. Then I felt the calmness of the Spirit, and I proceeded in the mind of Christ to walk down from the platform. I said, let everyone be calm. And I casually walked down to her and touched her and gave the spoken word, and immediately she was restored to life and danced about as a new child. And in my last service, she came 120 miles to report the victory of how it felt to be literally resurrected from the dead. Also, the power of thought has achieved such miracles in our temple that would defy imagination. Last week, there was called for a miracle presence that turned the water into wine. 10 large pitchers before the eyes of all the hundreds, the 2,000 gathered there, were literally turned from water into wine. And the sup of this anointed wine, in one case, one lady from Canada, who had not been able to use her limb for 5 years, was healed instantly. Hundreds were healed as all over the congregation they drank of this wine that came from heaven. Truly, our thoughts are things. We must then correct our ideas and not think in terms of the old conditioning. Invalids are often recommended to travel, and they gain great advantage to themselves by so doing, because by seeing and thinking of so many other things, the attention is diverted from themselves. And this is what I'm doing. I'm excoriating myself of mortal nature, of Jim Jones, of the carnal mind. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life in Christ Jesus. But why should divergent travel or other things have any therapeutic value if their thoughts have nothing to do with the inception and progress of their malady? In proportion as their disease and their trouble are out of thought, they become non-existent. A chronic disease being a fixedness of thought, a morbid steadfastness of a false idea. In this condition, a new idea, a radical change in the mode of thinking has great remedial efficacy. It may fall as silently upon the soul of the sufferer as the dew upon a fading flower, but has the vivifying power of the archangel's trump to raise the dead, for ideas are the only things that really live. It may be considered as an established principle, a demonstrated truth, that we can change the direction of our thoughts. We can think of something besides the pain of the disease. We have seen this literally in our temple, and disease is passing away. In over 5 years, not one person has died out of a congregation of 4,000 active members. We have seen the resurrection of the dead, and literally the healing of every known disease, because we are diverging our thoughts. We are taking our consciousness of the Christ and not considering pain and disease. This certainly is not a cure for you, is a relief. But I can tell you we can go a step further than this and institute a line of thought that runs counter to the disease and will neutralize it with as much scientific certainty as an acid coming in contact with an alkali will change it to something else. Some of the most deadly poisons can be rendered harmless by the chemical action of an antidote. They are commuted at once into an innocuous substance, a harmless compound. So it comes within the compass of the powers of our minds when in pain and disease to think that we shall recover. As a man thinketh in his mind, so is he. Such a thing is manifestly conceivable. We can think this as easily as we can say it, for we could not say it even as a repetition of the words of another unless it was first a thought in the mind. We can also think that we now are getting well, that a cure is inaugurated, and that the pain or the disease or the unhappiness or the social strife or the prejudice or the economic unrest is passing away. It is quite possible and practical to think this, and if we continue this course, I believe we shall soon in the degree begin to feel it, and it becomes so far a reality, for it is only thought that gives a real existence to anything in the universe. The only reality is thought. The feeling added to the thought makes it an act of faith, for faith is not a mere intellectual belief, but a feeling that a thing is true, and thus, according to Paul, it becomes the substance of things hoped for, the evidence, the convincing proof of things not seen, as declared in Hebrews 11. All the operations are modifications of mind, are reducible to thought and feeling. Thought and feeling are the essence of the soul and the sum and substance of all mental activity and soul life. They include and bound our very existence. Without them we should be as nothing. If I subtract them from what I call myself, my individual being, there is no remainder. When these are arrayed, yes, when they are arrayed against disease, my very being is an antagonism to it, and the malady is rooted at the root. Here is the antidote to the abnormality of mind, that morbid thinking, that is the cause of disease. If we think in our heart that we are able to perform the miracles of cure and finally the restoration of our body and soul, as Romans said, to it finally and consummately the redemption of our body, it shall be done. Remember, I am literally proving, manifesting as the Son of God. There's immutable proof that as a man thinketh in his mind, so is he, and to him that believeth all things are possible. Come and enjoy the ever presence of Christ. We are all the sons of God. It doth not yet appear what we shall be, but when we see that perfect Christ, we shall be like him. We are living in that unfoldment, and we want you to enjoy it also. God bless you. These days, the quest of the church and the effort for manifestation of the sons of God is being hindered because of lack of faith. If our mental force has become weakened and the mind has become fixed in its action in a wrong direction, and in our unaided strength we are not adequate to the instituting of the proper line of thought and feeling, we may receive help from others. Here is the highest office, the divinest function of the apostolic position. unless we can by some means inaugurate a new mode of thinking and feeling with which the disease cannot coexist, it is of no use. Faith makes us whole now as it did in the days of the Nazareth consciousness for the reason that it is inconsistent with the mental state that underlies the disease and supplants it. It is a spiritual medicine having the nature of an infallible antidote. It is a new mode of thinking and feeling that comes in to overpower the morbid mental state, which is the original cause of all maladies, disease, and sin. The influence of thought in the inception of disease and its cure is unconsciously and instinctively recognized in common parlance. It is often said of an invalid that he is well if he only thought so. After recovery, the remark is frequently made that he could have recovered sooner if he had sooner come to think so. This is true, though its expression is often tainted with a lack of charity. To change the morbid thinking is precisely where the difficulty in the cure lies, because as we think in our minds, so are we. He who would assist the invalid to rise out of the material range of thought and sense by state of mind that are the ground of the disease must not address himself or his remedies merely to the body of the patient, for that is aiding weight to the millstone that is verily drawing the patient down. He must be taught to forget the body and become spirit, to literally forget those things which are behind. The body is in itself lifeless, motionless, and sensationless. It has neither thought, intelligence, nor feeling. All these are in the soul. If we would stop letting our bodies commandeer us. I did that 15 years ago when I was given up hopeless to die with cancer, and my mind through the Christ healed me. And it does so every minute of every day in our people's temple assembly. We have seen six literally resurrected from the dead in past weeks. One last week, 88 years of age, given up. All medical people around us said there's no hope. All medical evidence of life had ceased. They've given him microdosing and other therapeutics, but when I walked down calmly the road before that congregation of 3,000, she was made every day. For the mind is the only reality. Even though the body was in shambles and her eyes were set against the ceiling, I saw the mind that is alive. He is a soul that liveth and never dies. The body is in itself. All these are in the soul. To perceive this is a long step towards recovery. What we call the physical organism is the most unreal part of human nature. This may sound like an abstract theory to you, but in people's temple it is working. For years we have not had one person die, not a funeral. So I think it's worthy of your consideration. This must become to us an ineffaceable conviction, and be so enwrought into our very being as to change our mode of thinking, feeling, speaking, and acting. In addressing those that are sick, the body should be ignored, and we should speak as a soul, and from the soul to the soul of the patient or sufferer. We then speak from the divine realm of the causation, and have a power over disease that cannot be gained by occupying any other standing ground. The man who is bound with the iron fetters of sense and is in the underground dungeon of materialism can afford but small aid to another in the same condition with himself. That's why in this pursuit to become a manifested son and daughter of God, we must overcome materialism. To him that would follow after the Christ, he must first deny himself of all materialism, of all other connections except the law of mind and spirit. To possess the divinely ordained power of mind over matter and the soul over body, you must be unshackled and born into the true liberty of the spirit. You must be elevated above that range of thought and plane of cognition that are limited to a mere sensuous seeming and the point of truth to the discernment of the spiritual reality of things. Much that passes current for science is only the semblance of truth and not a spiritual intelligence. This is a divine healing force, the power of God, good, and the wisdom of God unto salvation. It constitutes in us a point of attachment between the soul and the creative mind thought, and repairs the broken link which has disjoined us from God, good, harmony, and love. The utterances of such persons will be the echo of God's ideas and have the authority of divine oracles. His mind vibrates in harmony with the infinite mind, and his thoughts become one with the power that created and upholds the world and is perpetually exhibited in nature's laws. The spiritual physician or he who heals the body by touching the springs of life in the soul of the patient should speak and act in the divine realm of his being, as did Jesus the Christ. Yes, the words that I speak unto you, I speak not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. Man is the highest manifestation of God in the universe, and it's for this purpose that I come on the radio to make you manifestly aware of this in a broader and more comprehensive sense than the church has ever recognized. God is manifested in the flesh. We have being in him who has existence in us. Read Ephesians 3. Paul affirms that what may be known of God is manifested in man in Romans 1, which implies that outside of ourselves we have and can have no knowledge of God. To find God there and identify our life with his life is to be invested with a power over disease like that which has been exhibited only by Christ in the consciousness of Nazareth. The same language might be used in relation to Jesus. What is meant by that term in the Christian system is not the Jesus of history, the mere son of Joseph or Mary, who has ever been the object of worship in the Christian church. I am afraid in an idolatrous sense, this has been the great mistake of the religious world. The real Christ is to be sought within, Christ within you, your hope of glory, where alone he, the Savior, can be found. He represents and personifies the principle of spiritual life and intelligence and is identical with it. In harmony with this view, Paul the Apostle speaks of the sublime mystery or of the arcane doctrine of Christianity as being that of Christ in you, the hope of glory, in Colossians. And in the deepest prayer or introspection that has ever been uttered by the lips of man, Jesus Christ says of his disciples or scholars of every age, I in them and thou in me, that they may be made perfect or complete in one, as John 17 points out. For as a principle of spiritual intelligence, his life may be mingled and blended with ours into a unity. Of this Paul speaks when he says, it is no more I that live, but Christ that liveth in me, as Galatians 2 says. In this state of the soul, the powers of the individual man, the personal ego, become augmented and reinforced like the addition of an ocean to a drop of water. In union with the Christ, when thus viewed, we come into fellowship or community of life with the collective man, the Maximus Homo, and with all the fullness of the Godhead, and are complete in him who is the head of all principality and power, as Colossians declares. Yes, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ that liveth in me. That's why I speak in the first person and command healings over the airways. For Jim Jones is dead and Christ is alive. If you will come and partake of this spirit, you too shall be made ever with whole. I thank you. The fundamental idea that I am attempting to bring across to you, the radio listening audience, is that everything in its last analysis, or when we come to its inmost reality, is only a thought. For as a man thinketh in his mind, or heart, so is he. What we call the external world and the human body, which is a part of it, are the thought of God, good, and we come to know them only so far as we think of them. They are revealed to us by the same power that creates them. Disease, like every other thing, is created, or at least has an existence, only by thought. In the pentapathic method of cure, it is a fundamental principle that thought is the ground of all reality. The words real and reality come from the Latin res, which is an extract equivalent of our word thing and means that which is an object of thought. This is recognized in the Hebrew, where the term for word means also thing, as a word is only an expressed thought. That which is out of thought has to us no conscious existence, for consciousness is only a mode of thought. A thing, a world, a disease, comes into our consciousness only when we think of it. To be unconscious of a thing is all the same as if it were not, if it did not exist at all. To bring disease into the realm of unconsciousness is to make it unreal, or, in other words, to cure it. For to be diseased and not know it, or think of it, or be conscious of it, is equivalent to being without disease, or disease. In disease we feel weak. This is implied by the terms that are used to express it in all languages of the earth. All maladies are called infirmities, or weaknesses. The same want of force or vigor is implied when we call the sick person an invalid. From in, not, and validus, strong. Feebleness is a fundamental idea of a disease condition, and the woman healed by Jesus is a representative of the aspect of disease. She was bowed down with a spirit of infirmity for 18 years. Where we do well to mark the Hebraism in the use of the genitive for an adjective. An infirm spirit was the root of the malady. In this enfeebled state of the will and of the power thought to enter into a combat with disease in our unassisted strength seems like an effort to lift a mountain from its base. Is there any help that is always available and effectual? Can we come into union with the everywhere present power that creates and governs the universe and join our weakness to the divine omniscience and omnipotence in our curative effort? There is in our nature a psychometrical or sympathetic sense, the higher use of which is communion with God, good, our intelligence, and all of the higher intelligences of the higher dimensions and the many heavens. As Paul mentioned on one case, he was carried away to the third heaven. Heavens are unlimitable. The evolution of the intelligence of man, our mind, is fathomless. By means of this, in a perfectly natural way, we may be strong in the Lord as a good shepherd and the power of his might, as Ephesians 6 declares. We have seen in what precedes the wonderful power of thought over the bodily organism, but our thought may be reinforced by an alliance with the infinite mind, the mind of Christ in you, which is your hope of glory. God created and still creates the world and all that is in it by thought. We can so come into direct and immediate communication with him that his creative energy shall be added to our positive and volitional power, so that there shall be a confluence of the two and into a unity and harmony. Where is God, and how may I find him? We look for him in the distances and thus miss him, for the sky is everywhere and nowhere where nothing exists, as one said in the simple manner. I have swept space with the telescope and found no God. There, and you cannot find him there, because you did not look for him where alone the soul can find him. We do not discover God as we do a new planet in the heavens. He is revealed to us in the New Testament, our covenant, and demonstrated by the intuitive reason as a spirit. And the spirit is to be found and known by thought only, and not to be seen by the sinuous eye of the body. Jesus Christ introduced into the thought of the world two important ideas: that God is our Father, and that consequently we are his sons. This implies that we derive our life perpetually from him and live in him. There is then in us an unbroken and ceaseless vital connection with God. God is inward to man. Secondly, before this grand disclosure, he was worshipped and adored and sought unto as an indefinable being at an obscure, if not unlimited, distance from men. Jesus taught us where to find him. We are to seek him within the enclosure of our own being. The Father is in me, and I am in the Father. We no longer seek the thoughts of God from external signs or from outward oracles, as that of Belfast or the Urim and the Thummim of the Jews. Paul, in an inspired moment, gave utterance to one of the profoundest truths in the universe of mind, the grandest verity within the compass of human thought: in him we live and are moved and have our being. And if one recognizes that as your only source of life and are unconscious of all other thoughts, you become then the divine thought, incarnated. You become the Word made flesh that dwells among men and is mighty to save. This I have been doing for many years now, incarnating the thought of God, exterminating mortality, eliminating the worship of things, materialism, as James 1:31 says, that pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is to minister to the orphans and widows in their affliction, and keep yourself unspotted from the worship of things or the world. And thus I cleared out the ego, eliminated the concern for material aggrandizement, adopted 8 children, than giving myself wholly over to the work of the Spirit of Christ, or the one thought that is all-powerful. All the powers that be are ordained of God, and there is no power but of God. And so I gave myself to that consciousness, and I am incarnating the Word to such a degree that last week a woman who had died was made whole again. 88 years of age, she was dead. But when I walked calmly down before that congregation of 3,000, the medical people had failed to bring her back to life. They'd given her all the remedies of therapy, not physician. Nothing had succeeded, but in that calmness of the sure Word of God, I proceeded forth and brought her back to life, and she danced about as a new child. This has happened 6 times in the past weeks and months. We have seen every malady healed, cancers expectorated before our eyes in every service, healing going on in people's temple every minute of the day, counseling by phone, ministry of intuition proceeds every minute and every second in our work, because I am giving myself room only for the Christ thought. He is my source of being. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, and I live abundantly. Yet not I that liveth, but Christ that liveth in me. If I were to proceed in your mind and live in you, then you could not live there. For only one mind can occupy a point of time, a space, a corporate body. Thus the Christ is occupying my mind. I have no thought for the deeds of this world, for the lust of this place, and the pride of life, and the love of money, and the love of the world cannot behave and bring about the love of the Father. So I am giving myself over totally to the occupancy of that mind which is infinite, and I am incarnating it to the satisfaction of thousands that proceed in all of our meetings. And you can come and test it for your own self and see that it works. The dead are raised, the blind eyes see, in one service alone instantly eight, but your blind from birth will heal instantly. And in another service, 500 people in one meeting alone that were crippled with arthritic pains and rheumatoid nodules, some bent over in wheelchairs, unable to walk. 500 in one service were instantly healed, because I am making the Word efficacious and mud, you see, in the midst of the people. I thank you for the privilege of incarnating the Word now, and I send it forth. And if you will come in harmony with that thought and recognize only that thought, it will satisfy all good desires. I thank you for the privilege of bringing Christ to you, the Redeemer, in our day. In Him, God, the highest and fullness of good, we live and move and have our being. As certainly as the unborn infant's life is that of the mother, so it is divinely true that somehow God's life includes ours, and we live because He lives and shall live as long as He exists. Our being is comprised in His, so if we could suppose the divine life to come to an end somehow, ours would terminate with it as sure. To compare great things with small, as a stream would cease to flow when its fountain is dried up. My existence may be distinct, but never separate from God. In the hidden depth of the soul, there is somewhere a point where our individual being comes in contact with God's good and is identified with the infinite life as a bow meets the ocean. This great truth may not now cross the threshold or door sill of our consciousness, but we may nevertheless be as certain of it as we are of the divine existence, or even of our own. We'll call this perfect point where God and man meet within the soul, the divine internal, and the entrance of God into man, and we affirm that it is by virtue of it that we shall live, and indeed live forever. When we cease to think of ourselves as separated from God, divine wisdom and intelligence, and come to view our being as comprised in His, as a bow, however far inland it may extend, it is not disconnected from the ocean, then we kindle anew the smoking wick of our candle of light in a divine and quenchless flame. When we see this truth in disease, in pain, and in happiness, the incoming tide of the ocean of a divine existence flows back into the river valley, throws its banks to the full, turns its current in another direction towards the uplands of health and blessedness, and causes it to overflow the others. That is why, by necessity and every dispensation, someone must incarnate the Christ. He said, "Lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. I will not leave you, nor forsake you." We, as the church that pleases Him, must make it certain that that Spirit does not leave the church. Certainly, there is a void in most institutions today. a famine for the hearing of the word of the Lord, and there is also a desolation for every institution called Christianity. Ichabod, so often written above their eyes, is the glory of God hath departed therefrom. A large proportion of diseases are of the so-called mental or nervous type, and that means to generate the mind of Christ, demonstrate it. It is an uneasy or dissatisfied state, as the word signifies, or perhaps there is a combination of more or less painful sensations, or a functional disturbance of one or more organs, and this is our great proportion of marvels today. All these conditions are under the control of the power of thought. The powers that in cases of organic disease are when there is an actual lesion or loss of continuity in an organ. In this case, the mental state that acts as a cause is more fixed and harder of removal. But to put the trouble, whatever it is, out of thought, to forget it, to ignore it, to think of something else, to institute a line of thought that is inconsistent with it, and to think in harmony with the unconscious effort of what we call nature to repair the lesion, is the best prescription for it. There is such a thing as soul in nature, an intelligent life operating everywhere in the mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdoms. The old doctrine of animus mundi is not without some foundation in reality. There is an intelligent principle recognizable by its constant action in every part and particle of the universe, in the grain of sand, in the flower, and in the stellar orbs. Nature is not unintelligent. There is an infinite current of living thought that runs through the whole of it. The numerous marks of design, the skillful adaptation of means to an end, which we see everywhere and in everything, indicate with logical certainty the continual presence and action of intelligent thought, the word being made flesh. This is not the mind of man, but is the oversoul, the universal mind, the absolute thought. There is a divinely intelligent force at work in the human body. It seems to be, and certainly is, the same intelligent soul principle, the identical God power that ceaselessly operates in the world at large. When we receive an injury or wound, this benevolent and intelligently active principle goes to work in the most skillful and artistic manner to repair the damage. This reconstructive force of nature, which is only a dream of the operation of God, gives omnipotent life in man, is the only remedy that can heal or relieve the energy. Heal if it comes within the range of possibility, and if not, alleviate the suffering. The soul principle in us, especially in the preconscious range of its action, has a close relationship to the soul in nature, and we can assist and greatly accelerate its curative action by thinking in concert with it. This intelligent principle in nature always acts and only in the right direction. Our thoughts, our faith, our fancy, our remedies can only be tributary and auxiliary to it. If our thoughts form an alliance with it, and their forces augmented by it, the most inveterate diseases yield to the combined therapeutic power of the finite and the infinite mind. It is the same power that creates and governs the world. It is the Logos, the Word, the divine intelligence and thought of which nature is a permanent expression. God's thoughts are always in the direction of our highest good, the healing of our diseases, and the removal of the causes of our unhappiness. This we are doing in the channeling of God's thoughts in people's temple, expressing the community in which we'll finally eliminate disease. The Acts of the Apostles gives an authoritarian concept by which we can and only can resolve the problems of mankind's disorder. Man must have an ordered and structured society in order to have peace, life, and life more abundantly. We are building that society that guarantees care to every member of our temple, that provides work, that provides outlets, recreation, creativity, education. 58 young people are in our college dormitory receiving education in all the fields of science and medicine through the offices of this great apostolic town. Quiet resting places are provided for all our people in the golden years. For we are allowing that thought of God to become our thought to such a degree that it's healing every known disease, every suffering of every day. We have seen six brought back to life in past weeks, literally, clinically dead by medical knowledge and medical prognosis. We have seen the restoration of the sight to the blind in the one service, 500 healed of crippling arthritic and rheumatoid disease in another service, because we are becoming the thought of God. For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord, and I, as you suffer today, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end, as Jeremiah declares. In other words, God's creative thought always cooperates with ours in every creative endeavor of our minds to cause us to realize the end of which we aim, perfection of body, mind, and soul, the restoration of all the paradise of God here on earth as it is in heaven. As a man thinketh in his mind, so is he. In fact, whatever attitude the mind assumes is reflected even in its most viable needs upon the physical plane. Hence we can understand how a recognition of the divine impulse of health, reflecting thoughts of freedom of deliverance, may result in an instantaneous restoration of the disordered functions of the body. I remember an elderly gentleman who once came for spiritual healing. He recounted the tales of his active easy during boyhood. He had been wholly free from disease until he reached an advanced year. He then, after exposure, had been attacked with rheumatism, and life had since been in pain and disappointment. He stated that there was a time when, as a youngster, he made long trips across the country, many consecutive days, never knowing what it was to be sick. He said furthermore that sometimes after a reminiscent call in which he placed himself again in the relation of the scout, he would, in a moment of abstraction of thought, rise up and walk across the room just as easily as at any time prior to the development of his rheumatoid condition. Then he decided exactly what he should do, began to meditate. He concentrated his mind upon the thought of youth and strength. For 30 minutes, the mind appropriated the thought, held it, and wrought out in his body that same boy's freedom from physical ailment. And he walked away, and whatever it held. It would be an easy matter to indefinitely extend illustrations to indicate that memory is no part of the physical, mortal, self, for Christ-like man. Keep in mind our original definition that memory is that part of the intuitive, innate self of spirit of man that has come into material consciousness. And the undeveloped consciousness which abides is the animating purpose of every life. We call it hope. We are saved by hope. Memory only differs from hope in its development. Mind is evermore omnipotent.
One, for instance, can read Quo Vadis, not following the scenes, not being in the midst, actually. To the sensitized soul, cries of the tortured Christian become audible. The brutal exaltation of the audience gone mad with the sight of blood appalls him. Unconsciously, he passes into the atmosphere of the sufferer's agony, till his own soul vibrates with the discord of death. What is the phenomena of this passion? The mind of the reader has transferred itself to the gladiatorial arena, and he lives 2,000 years ago. In antithesis of relation, the reader of Robinson Crusoe returns to the sensational days of his own childhood, and he actually joins Robinson Crusoe in the great and strange adventures. The child reads the fairy tales until he is himself transferred into the veritable fairy of his imaginings. The spirit side of man knows no time. The mind, having once created a vibration in the spirit atmosphere, once having expressed a thought that has in it the element of life and truth, that thought lives on forever. That thought can never die. Moreover, the soul, quickened to mental vibration, receives the message and on its way travels to the birthplace of that same thought. The gentle Nazarene declared to the world, I and my Father are one. Thus not only emphasizing his own unity with the Father, but teaching him who should accept the message of his own unity with the Father. When he said, Lo, I am with you always, he taught a sublime truth, one which the world has been slow to comprehend, God's unity with man. In the single term, always, he declares that unity can never be broken, however the soul may swing to a tangent, even there am I. Today let our memory wander with Christ in Galilee, bow with him in Gethsemane, walk with him as he gives life to all those wayshowers on the way. So when the soul's agony is on, memory teaches us it will not be alone. Memory is no part of the fleeting organism in which we dwell. Memory is immortal. Let us quicken our memory then to think on the positive. Let us turn again to the consideration of the spiritual body that invests the physical body. This is what we are doing in People's Temple's apostolic experiment.
We are considering the life that is in Christ. And by so doing, we are penetrating all the false images of man. We are bringing a restoration of apostolic living, complete sharing of all the benefits of God's abundance. We are seeing a restoration of life from the dead, sick in past weeks, literally out of a congregation of over 4,000 active communicants. We have not had one funeral in years. We are penetrating the recesses of false memory banks. Memory is that one part of the being that has come into full consciousness. And in that consciousness, we learn how limitless is the power of thought.
Memory not only holds that which you have personally required or acquired, but to the receptive soul, it reveals the conscious thought of the antecedent ages. Never lose sight of the fact that memory is no part of the physical man, has no relation to the brain. This is indicated in the fact that the insane man has two conditions of the brain, the distorted and the normal. Whereas memory is so often bearing thorns in most institutions and places in the life of America today, memory in the temple is a rose to bloom in our garden, to bring life and life more abundantly. The substance of that sentence runs thus: there is an element in the philosophy of Jesus Christ which comprehended will extract all the thorns of memory and make it sweet as hope, and give a hope that is redemptive, that will bring about eventually the restoration of all that man has envisioned God to be. Today is the day of salvation. All existence lies before us now. Eternity can have no starting point in time. It must be now or never. And if there be a now, it must stand forever. Heaven too must be now or never. It must be here or nowhere. The impediment is in thyself. Here or nowhere is the kingdom of God good. And this adamant insistence upon my part has brought a restoration of apostolic living on these beautiful acres. We're seeing total equality. The sharing of all of our resources, maintaining our people in their needs of education and in their golden years, full equality, because I am adamantly insisting that the kingdom of heaven is within and is here now, mighty to save. Through this insistence also, we are seeing the restoration of six who were clinically dead, given up by doctors. They are now living resurrected lives in our own midst. And out of a congregation of 4,000 active members, we have had not one funeral in years. The restoration of the sight to the blind, 8 in one service recently, 500 out of another meeting who were crippled with arthritis. This power, this efficacy of my statement is thus proven in demonstration of deeds and action. We are reaching knowledge of the spiritual reality. Daily our human consciousness is expanding and expanding, shaking free from the sense of limitation, ridding itself of cumbersome time, matter, and space. We are reaching indeed, as I said, the knowledge of spiritual reality of all, uncovering the glories of God and the errors of sin or mortal mindedness. We may not die to see God. The tomb is not the gateway to heaven. Here and now we may rise higher and higher in the spiritual scale until the eternal city with its divine government of equalitarianism is found within our very lives. The other world is not a definite place but a definite condition. It is not a realm only to be entered through upon by means of death, but may be entered at any moment by the harmony of the spirit of love. It is not a realm of mere passive contemplation, but of the most abounding energy and positive achievement. It is the condition of the most intense and significant activities. It is raising all the forces of life to a higher power. It is the elimination of negative thought and negative conditions. It is the emancipation from regret, fear, anxiety, constraint, and self-pursuit of aggrandizement. There is a breath of heaven in every loving thought, a vision of God in every living creature, a glimpse of eternity in every spiritual idea. How grand is the scheme of creation! How affluent is the provision of God for the needs of his creatures! There are sophisticates who cry, with what would I occupy myself to eternity? How could I escape boredom? All that I have seen, says one, teaches me to trust God for all I have not seen. We have seen a world overflowing with abundance. Before man walked out on earth, all things that he could ever need had been incorporated into creation. Before you call, I will answer. The fields and forests were literal fountains of supply for his physical needs. He found the sciences and arts to gratify his intellectual requirements, and within him an ever-present intuitive knowledge of the higher order to satisfy his own spiritual craving. At times he has wasted his substance and sat in abject poverty in the midst of plenty, but all his life holds that which he needs. The Creator's love affluence is everywhere manifest, and he has declared, all that I have is thine. And also, according to my works, command you me. This we are doing, and indeed living in the kingdom of heaven. For it is declared, as a man thinketh in his mind or heart, so is he. So we are thinking in terms of the heavenly consciousness, and in so doing we are restoring all that is beautiful, joyous, prosperous, and healthy. We are living in this prosperity at every joint, sinew, and cell of our bodily forms. Is it not clear that throughout eternity this same law of supply shall operate? I do not doubt that whatever can possibly happen is provided for in the inference of things. If man needs variety to forestall boredom, he shall find it where he finds himself. If he needs friends, they shall troop to him. If he needs reunions with those who have gone before, even in the most personal sense, it shall be so. All his needs throughout eternity are already met, though happily his selfish desires are ignored. Wherever he turns, he sees that God's love has been there before him and left a catch sufficient unto his needs. Now let me build my tabernacle, my spiritual sanctuary. Let me gather unto consciousness those pure thoughts and true ideas which compound the kingdom of heaven that we are enjoying in people's temple. This is the work of eternity. Let me begin now. I know nothing more clear and certain than this, but I must be as good and noble as it is possible for me to be. Let me hold to my work as did Nehemiah in building the wall about Jerusalem, giving no ear to the materialism, the aggrandizement and selfishness which calls up to me from below. Barely the world screams for attention, crying its sin, its wealth, and honors and its prestige. Let me pour into my thoughts such a volume of spiritual evidence that this voice is not heard. Let us love fearlessly, purely, sincerely. Love God supremely. Love his vast creation, the universe, and love my neighbor as myself. For in here lies my treasure, the fulfillment of my hopes, my championship, with my faith in eternity, my joy in my life, my duty to my fellows, my service to the world, my oneness with God. Love is the fulfilling of the law. And I see today a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth are passing away. And I hear a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he is dwelling with them and being their God. And God literally is wiping away all tears from our eyes, and there shall be no more death, and we're seeing it in people's temple, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away in the consciousness that Christ is here today, the same as he was yesterday, today, and forever. The God that changeth not, lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world, and I will not leave you nor forsake you. I'm living in this consciousness and reproducing this consciousness in masses of multitudes too numerous to count. The fundamental ideas of all possible religions, so far as they are expressed by an intellectual belief or creed, seem to be the common possession of mankind. The essential idea of Christianity is really unfolded in the Johannine Gospel. The radical elements of all religious belief, the essential faith of the universal church, which is older than Christianity, appear to have become a part of the original duality of the human soul and to have been deeply impressed upon the spiritual nature of man. St. Augustine, under the mistake that Christianity is a creed, affirms that what is now called the Christian religion has existed among the ancients and was not absent from the beginning of the race until Christ came in the flesh, from which time the true religion which existed already began to be called Christian. Religion has existed in all ages of the world, and always will exist as long as human nature remains the same, or until such a time that man is able to construct the perfect society or heavenly consciousness. There is no absolutely new religion since the commencement of human history. There has been a singular pugnacity in the hold which the fundamental ideas of religion have had upon the human mind. In Christianity, we behold the highest exhibition of religious life and development of religious thought, which have sprung out of the nature of man according to the law of spiritual evolution. But it is not unreasonable to suppose that even Christianity itself may undergo a still higher development than the world has yet ever seen. Religion, as represented by the church in past ages, and by the Christian world of today,